evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Fan Experience. We are back. We missed you guys. I know you guys missed us. As always, for all you new viewers, my name is Mike Kados. I am the host, and alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. Rick, how we doing?
Doing well, Mike. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back. Happy New Year, everybody. Season 2, episode 45. So much to get into, but it's good to be back and good to be here with everybody. So, let's get to it, man. So much to get to.
Yeah, I mean, we had a little two-week hiatus. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season and, enjoyed their holiday break, New Year's break. But now, back to business. And a lot of teams in the NFL, they took care of business this past Sunday. Some more than others, I would I would say. Let's start it off with Mr. Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Giants got the win that they needed against the Cowboys to give them a shot to get to the playoffs. Granted, they were a 6-10 team, so they can't be too upset. And Logan Ryan said something to that aspect. But the Eagles, down 3, don't kick a field goal to tie it. Then they pulled Jalen Hurts and put in Nate Sudfeld. Like, why can't the Jets tank like that?
Again, welcome everybody. It was.
Can we get Doug Peterson as our coach?
No. It was an incredible Sunday night. This looks bad for the NFL. I mean, here you are. You have a Sunday night game. I mean, the Eagles pretty much can play spoiler. They can knock out the Redskins, right? The Giants get in. The Giants just beat the Cowboys in a pretty good game. So here you have the last game of the season after you get through all this COVID stuff. And then what comes out of that game is that he pulls Sudfeld, tanks the game to hold on to the number 6 pick in the draft. And it would just look bad. And, as a Jet fan, for the last 3 weeks of the season, you and I were like, man, the Jets should lose or whatever. And, I got to say, the players are right. They play to win the game, as Herm Edwards said. And those guys were upset because they don't care about draft picks. They care about playing to win the game. And they just felt like that opportunity was taken from them and it was stolen from them. And you read the reports. A couple of defensive players had to be held back. Jalen Hurts on the sideline, you could read his lips saying this was BS.
Yeah.
And it was right. If you're going to tank, it's a meaningless game, fine. But not in a game where you're about to knock out the Redskins. And, I mean, yes, Jalen Hurts.
Who?
I mean, the Washington football team, excuse me. Jalen Hurts was brutal. What was he, 7 of 20 or something like that?
He didn't play well.
But he ran for 2 touchdowns. But you don't bring in Nate Sudfeld after the game. At the fourth quarter. I don't care if you wanted him to get snaps, reps, whatever. That's just a bunch of bullshit. You don't do that. And it was just a really, really. It ended the season badly for the NFL. And I don't know how Peterson wins back that locker room. I really don't. A lot of guys are pissed off over there. I know he's going to sit down with Howie Roseman and the ownership of the Eagles, I think, this week, right? I don't know. I don't know how he recovers from that. Wentz wants out. I mean, it's just a mess down there. I don't know how they fix it.
Yeah, I mean, but, to one point, it's nice to see Alex Smith get a shot to go to the playoffs after what he went through.
Yeah.
So that is definitely a silver lining because I don't think the Giants were going to go anywhere. I don't think the Washington football team is going to go anywhere, so it might be a one and done.
Listen, with that defense,
Brady's got that offense clicking right now.
He does.
You cannot deny that. Like he Antonio does. Brown was playing like a beast. Evans did get banged up, which definitely hurts them.
Yeah, hyperextended that knee. Ugh, that was awful.
Was that what it was? I didn't read up on it. It's nice to see Alex Smith at least, get there and get to the playoffs after everything he's been through.
Yeah. And if you saw his wife took all those all those things, she made that into like a Lombardi trophy.
Montage. Yeah. Some stuff that she posted on Instagram too. Real quick, our friend Kevin Larney is
Kevin Larney. We got a shout out for him. Yeah.
Kevin, congratulations on your new position as an intern at Vayner Sports. All that hard work that you're putting in, well deserved, my friend. And go get it. I have no doubt you will.
I want to see Kevin on one of those IGs with Gary, talking about his company, talking about Wild Chat Sports. I want to see him on one of those. I'm going to check every day, Kevin, to make sure you're on one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations again. Let's see who made it in, who didn't. The Cardinals lost to the Rams, so they got knocked out.
They got knocked
out. The Dolphins got spanked by the Bills.
Yeah, and we're going to have
two quarters, not even.
And we're going to have our friend Mark on in a minute, but that's a tough situation over there. Is Tua the guy? You know, they got a good defense. They got a great coach. Is Tua the guy to lead that team in the future, man? I don't know. You've had to replace him with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's been a little shaky. Not sure if he's the guy over there. We'll see, though. We'll see. They have the third pick in the draft. So, I'd be stunned if they picked a quarterback, but, who knows?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to pick a quarterback. I think they're going to see what they got with Tua. I mean, you can't judge it all on a rookie year. I mean, they still did good, but granted, that was a lot of Fitzpatrick. But out of the rookie quarterbacks, you got Joe Burrow, who was doing great, Justin Herbert breaking rookie records.
Yeah.
And then you got Tua, and obviously Herbert was the latest one of those three. And there was another quarterback, right?
It was Tua, Herbert, Joe Burrow.
Maybe that was the big three.
I think those were the big three.
Yeah, right, it was there. A lot of wide receivers this past year.
That's yeah, it was receiver draft, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Justin Jefferson.
Man.
He's going to be a player to watch. Broke Randy Moss's record for receiving yards, right?
Yep.
So, and Derrick Henry, 2,000 yards rushing.
How many guys did Derrick Henry stiff on this year? I counted four, at least four. Like, he just, a man like that just tossing grown men around like ragdolls is incredible.
Like,
there should be a trophy for that. Like, how many guys can you physically just, like, toss across a field in a football season? That's
well, maybe they'll have a little bust of Derrick Henry to replace the Heisman with the
hand with a guy flying like on his back. That's great. Yeah.
Oh man, but yeah, I mean, congratulations to him. And it was I felt like it was a very fast season.
Yeah, flew by.
Maybe because we had so many games played on different days that we never were out of action. We were always watching. And then even you yesterday, you're like, what am I going to do? It's no Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I had the Knicks on tonight. We'll get on to the Knicks a little later. But I'm like, man, I'm usually watching, there's a game to watch, man. There's something to watch. So, it's great that the NFL got through the season. I mean, with all the COVID stuff, the issue that the Ravens had and the Browns had and the Steelers had, Tennessee starting the season with all that COVID stuff. I mean, that the league got through the season is just is a tremendous job to the NFL, to all the medical staff, all the doctors, and for them logistically to pull it off was just incredible. And to the players, for them following the protocols and being safe and all that. So that's a great job. But now we're on to the playoffs. I got to say, in the AFC, I'm going to call it right now. I like the Bills and the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. In the NFC, I think it's going to be Green Bay, Tampa, and,
the Washington football team might beat Tom Brady.
They might. They're a good team. If there's a one team that can beat them, because what gets Brady is a defensive line who can pressure people. And you got, that team is just loaded up front. So they get some pressure on them. I think they just don't have a quarterback. I don't know that Alex Smith is going to lead them there. That's their issue. So
No. I mean, the defense is nice, but I think Brady has that offense clicking right now.
Click. Well, let's hope Evans comes back. We'll see.
Yeah, but Antonio Brown, got a bonus too.
Yeah,
a couple shovel passes, and he cleared his bonus incentives. Yeah. But we'll get back to
we'll get back to
NFL,
that.
And we'll get back also keep you apprised of all the Black Monday action yesterday.
Oh, we got to get to that. Yeah,
but right now we are going to welcome our next guest. This guy, he brings the energy each and every weekday morning alongside his father on LinkedIn, Noodleberg Daily Huddle. I could find nobody else better to start off season two with than the guy that's going to bring this energy. We welcome now Mark Noodleberg.
Mark, hello, how you doing? Hello. I'm ecstatic. I'm happy to be here. glad to be on the Fan Experience. Love to hear you guys talking football. And yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock at night. Doesn't matter. I got the same energy.
Yeah, well, that's great. And you know, I definitely expected that. You know,
you're always the expectation. You got to meet the bar every time.
Well, you're always on the ball, right?
That is exactly correct.
So, you know, so we chatted a little bit, you know, briefly before, you know, but, you know, who did you grow up, you know, watching?
I mean, I grew up watching Dan Marino and the Dolphins, right? So I grew up as a kid, you know, I'm born in 86. So by the time I was really paying attention to football, it was the early 90s and Duper and Clayton and those Dolphins. I mean, I remember the Sleeping in the Meadowlands very, very well because my family are Jet fans. My dad's side of the family are all Jet fans. They're from Long Island, New York, from Baldwin.
Oh, wow.
So that side grew, you know, they were Knick fans, they were Jet fans, they were Met fans. But I was born in South Florida. So I was, you know, moving towards that lineage of rooting for my home teams. So I vividly remember the fake spike and the touchdown in the corner of the end zone in the Meadowlands. But, you know, I grew up watching those teams and I was privileged for my dad to, you know, what he did in business. He was, you know, well known in the cell phone world early on in the game. And we had guys like Mark Clayton coming by the house to have my mom's lasagna on Wednesday nights. So super cool to be around those teams, to be around the Miami Heat as they were, you know, they were coming out. It was the first few seasons early in my life and watching those young teams with Steve Smith, Bimbo Coles, Matt Geiger, was cool to grow up around that, you know, and to be in a town that had sports emerging, you know, the Marlins. I remember going to the inaugural game in 93 and then watching them win the World Series in 97 when I was playing Little League baseball. So it was cool to be in a town that had sports emerging. And then obviously when you're growing up around the U down here, even though I wasn't necessarily a Canes fan, that swagger and what they built and what happened during that time, to live and be around it and be in the vicinity of it, it's hard not to, you know, get into that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's definitely electrifying and you just get sucked in, and, you know, that's part of the fan experience. And that's part of, you know, what drove us to make this show. It's a small world that your dad was from Baldwin. You know, my dad's in Baldwin right now. So yeah, I thought you guys were Floridians,
you know, I am. For life. I am.
Yeah, you are.
I got my dad moved down when he was 13, I think.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Yeah. So let's touch on you. You went to University of Florida, correct?
So I actually went to Florida State. So I'm a Florida State grad. And then I started my college football coaching career at Florida State. I started as an equipment manager in my freshman year, worked my way up through the organization. Jimbo Fisher became the offensive coordinator when I was a sophomore. I started working for him, worked my way underneath him, and kind of became a guy that he could count on in the organization. When he became the head coach, I graduated, and he hired me on as the assistant special teams coach underneath Eddie Grant. That launched my coaching career full time. I was at Florida State for 3 years, Cincinnati for 2 years, University of Florida for a year, University of Nevada for a year, and then Lafayette College in Eastern Pennsylvania for 2 years before I checked out of the college football coaching world, got into the business world, and started my life as an entrepreneur.
Oh, man, that's an incredible story. Why and thanks for coming on tonight, Mark, again. We really appreciate it. Why did you feel – I mean, you were being pretty successful as a coach. Why did you feel that the business side of sports was the way for you to go instead of staying in coaching?
So the politics of college football coaching is a little rough. And I mean, you guys talked about it today, Bloody Monday. You know, there are a lot of coaches who got fired today, and there's a lot of guys who got fired who deserve to be fired, but that are going to be hired right back into that same role and do the same things that they've done at other organizations, because that's the only qualifier. The qualifier to get the job is that you've already done the job. Mm-hmm. And having spent 10 years working my way all across the country and getting hired and fired for all kinds of reasons, I had a real reality check with myself that said, look, my only goal left was to be a head coach, right? I was a special teams coordinator. I've been a recruiting coordinator. I had been really successful with what I had done on special teams everywhere I had been. And the reality of me becoming a head coach was pretty thin, you know, just being realistic about who I was, what my background was, working my way up through the organizations, not having a playing background, not having family in the business. I was looking down the barrel of a journeyman career where I was probably going to have to move every 1, 2, 3 years and hope that the right guy got the right job at the right time and that I'd be able to get elevated into that role. And I just, at 32, wasn't sure that if I got to 55 and looked back on my career with all of the sacrifice that it takes to be a football coach, would I be okay sitting there going, all right, I'm 55, I'm never going to be a head coach, yet I sacrificed my whole life to do this. Is it worth it? And I knew I could always go back. I said, I can take a year, and if I get out and know that I have to go back to it, I'll be able to go back.
Yeah.
But if I'm ever going to do this, I need to do it now. And right. So that was the moment.
That's wow. That's an incredible story. Now, when you go into the side of the sports business, like you said, you didn't know anybody in the sports business. How were you able to break in? I mean, what was your first sort of
free labor?
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, so how I got into coaching is the same way that I suggest anybody get into whatever it is they want to do. Mm-hmm. And that's, you got to be willing to work for free. Like, you have to earn your way into whatever it is that you really want. And that's how I got started. Like, I was an equipment manager. I didn't even have aspirations to be a coach. Just the more I got involved with the organization, the more I wanted to learn, the more I wanted to do. So the more I just started hanging around the building, the more I just started being around the coaches and seeing what they needed, and whether it was, you know, pouring coffee or making copies or running to the airport to pick up somebody's family, it didn't really matter what the job was. I was just going to be there to do it. And I earned equity and value with the coaches and the people that were on the staff, to where I started gaining more responsibility, to where I got hired into jobs that I had already been doing just because I was around.
Right.
And that's really how I got in. And when I got out of coaching and got into the business world, you know, I got hired by a company called Good Karma Brands and started selling ESPN digital advertising in local markets. Got a great lesson about digital marketing and what it takes. But I quickly saw the parallels of what made me successful as a coach, applying those same disciplines to what I needed to do in the business world. And I come from an entrepreneurial family. My grandfather, you know, was in retail. My dad started in retail and then started our company, On the Ball, which, you know, we're very proud of here.
Yep, so there it is. Yeah, it's right there.
By the way, it's
when you're looking at it mirrored, it's so hard.
Yeah, I know. I'm still trying to get used to it. 45 episodes in, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, On the Ball has gone through a lot of different phases in its life. It started as a, you know, sports marketing firm and became a digital marketing agency, and then really continued to transition to where my dad was getting hired to train sales staffs on how to modernize the sales process and bring relationship selling back into everything that they do. And so when he helped me really leverage LinkedIn to start my career and to build a network when I was working for ESPN Digital, you know, I saw what he was doing and how he was doing it. I said, I want to get back to coaching. That's really something that, you know, that's my passion, is the development of people. Mm-hmm. And with what I learned from building successful teams on special teams and what I learned about leadership and building culture, accountability, discipline, time management, all of those things tied directly into being successful in business. And so kind of collaborating with my dad on what I knew from sports and what had made him successful as an entrepreneur for so long, we've come up with this blend of content to teach people. Really, it doesn't really matter what industry you're in or what business you work in or what you're doing, the basic fundamentals of success and how to do it. And that's really where we're at now.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's great. Now, For those of you who don't know Mark already, you know, I met him through, you know, this show that he has with his dad in the morning, Nudelberg Daily Huddle, every weekday morning at 8 a.m. And is it only on LinkedIn or is it on other places?
It's on YouTube. It's on Facebook. We're not on Instagram Live. But so, I mean, the three major channels that we that we're through is Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. But, you know, very similar to what you guys are doing. We do it through StreamYard. Yeah. You know, ours is a shot of adrenaline in the morning. You know, we and it's interesting because in the coaching world, most staffs that I worked on, we had a 7:30 staff meeting. So I've been an early riser for a long time in my life. My dad is a very early riser. He gets up at 4 o'clock and gets going. And we have always had these calls in the morning where we would just kind of check in with each other. You know, we talk about current events and what was happening, and we talk a little strategy and ideas and what was going on. And then we go about our business for the rest of the day. And when the pandemic hit, you know, my dad had been doing the huddle as something for his coaching clients for a way for them to get to him more than their weekly meeting. And it just kind of seemed like, hey, we're already doing this conversation. Why don't we just do it, you know, in the show? Why don't we make it, you know, both of us in this, and because people were yearning for any kind of event and some kind of community to get together and connect. And it just took off. I mean, it took a life of its own. The people that support it every single day. I mean, on LinkedIn alone, we hold between 50 and 60 people live from 8 to 8:20. And it's a blast. I mean, you know, it's a lot of work. You guys know creating the content and creating storylines and, but people are super engaged with it. We're talking to them. They're talking to us. And it's just a great way to set your intention for the day, because we believe firmly in that everything starts between the 6 inches between your ears. And if you don't set that right in the beginning of the day, you got no chance. So, you know, setting your focus with good energy, good people, good content, and just some noodle nuggets, as we like to call them, on how to really, you know, take some actionable items and make yourself better daily. That's what we live by.
Yeah. And, you know, I could attest to, you know, it is something that definitely motivates you in the morning, and some good music too.
Oh yeah. We got to have our morning motivational music. We've added a theme song. Now we got Teddy Pendergrass as our theme song. So it's continued to grow and develop into more of a true morning show, and it's super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that little coffee thing.
Yeah.
Coffee graphic. Yeah, it's nice. Well, honestly, you know, it's like I see a lot of people coming up with a new look and whatever for 2021, you guys included. I'm like, I need to change it up a little bit. So I made up a new background, some new graphics, you know, just trying to brighten it up just a little bit. The other one was a little too dark. We want to set off 2021. No, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. It's night and day between that were very first episode. It was just like a very, you know, bland, just dark blue screen with nothing. It was just it was flat, dark blue, and that was it. And just the logo, it was disgusting. Now that I look back on it, it's just crazy. And you look back on like something like Joe Rogan, you know, like episode 20, and he's on 1200 now. But if you look at show 20, and it's like, you know, he's just in his basement, the lighting's like horrible. But that brings me to my next point. You know, obviously you have the Nudelberg Data Huddle, but you also have another podcast. It's called Doesn't Matter, Get Better.
The DMG conversation.
Yeah. So it's all about getting 1% better every day. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So that's a philosophy that the term, and I always have to pay homage to Pat Myers, because Pat is the lacrosse coach at Lafayette who said the term to me, DMGB. And I was like, what does that stand for? And he's like, doesn't matter, get better. And I was like, why have I not thought of this already? You know, like, this is something I've talked about my entire career, yet I've never thought to make it an acronym. and it's just a philosophy of, especially in college football, where you're dealing with kids that are 18 to 22 years old, and they got a lot going on, right? Like, you know, you're just being a student alone is tough, but then you're going through changes and you got your girlfriend and you got your friends and you've got social media. And especially when you're at places like the University of Florida and Florida State, there's a lot of things happening around you that are distractions. And in college football, you have a time limit. You only get the kids for, you know, 3 hours a day. And so in those 3 hours, you got to be able to teach them. You got to be able to develop them. You got to be able to motivate them. And you got to be able to get them to buy into what you're doing in order to get everybody moving in the same direction. So that was always kind of my mindset of, look, when you get here to the building, it doesn't matter. You got to find a way to get better right now. You can't worry about your homework assignment. You can't worry about your dog. You can't worry about your grandma. If you allow those distractions to infiltrate this time, you're going to waste this opportunity for you to really hone your craft. So stepping out of that, you know, I wanted to re-engage with some of the people that I knew that were great coaches that I wanted to give a platform to share. And as I started meeting more and more entrepreneurs who had really amazing stories about overcoming adversity and about taking that mentality of, it just doesn't matter, I got to find a way to get better, I wanted to continue to showcase them. So it's not something that I'm like regimented about. Like, I, you know, I'm not worried about putting out an episode weekly. It's really something that I use as just my way of, when I find somebody who's got that story that I'm like, this needs to be shared, it's my opportunity to help them share it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Right.
Yeah, Mark, do you think that, you know, in the coaching world and the business world, do you think it's the same? The same disciplines apply, whether, you know, like I said, in the business world and the coaching world, you know, it's one set, one track mind, the focus, the early hours. I mean, is it one and the same, or is there, in the sports world, do you deal with a little more different things than you would do in the business world?
So, I mean, obviously there are nuances in both, you know, like Nick Saban being the CEO of a company, it's going to have a lot of HR problems. Yeah. And the HR department's going to have a field day with Coach Saban, you know, but same, some CEOs of some companies leading a football team, you got to be really disciplined. Right. You have to have that disciplinarian in you. And that's where I like coaching people that are in the business world, because a lot of times leaders are hesitant to hold people accountable, because I think holding people accountable tends to have a negative connotation to it. Like, you're an asshole. And sorry if I'm not supposed to cuss.
Go ahead. Knock yourself out.
Or you you got to come at it like you're hitting somebody with a stick. And that's not true. Holding people accountable is holding them to a standard that you know they can achieve, yet they might not think they can achieve it. So while it's uncomfortable because you're pushing people beyond their boundaries and you might feel like the bad guy, holding people accountable is the only way to create a successful organization. So those, like, that philosophy is the same. The way you discipline people is different. You know, like, the way I'm going to discipline somebody on a football field by running gassers or running stadiums or, you know, doing something that's physically taxing, I'm not going to do that in the office, but there's got to be something. What can I take away? How can I create a consequence for people that aren't holding up the standard that I expect our organization to uphold?
Right. So when you're coaching your clients or the people in the words, is that what you're finding, that just like a lot of these leaders are just not like, don't have the discipline? Are they afraid of holding people accountable? I mean, what is it that holds them back from taking that next step?
There's a wide array of things, you know. Yeah. I mean, to generalize, the basic buckets that I work in with most people are, number one, time management. Like, I want people to understand that when we went to football practice, there wasn't a second of the 2 hour and 20 minute practice that wasn't accounted for. And when I say accounted for, I mean script, like written down on an Excel spreadsheet, that from 2 o'clock to 2:05, we would be doing warmups. And then from 2:05 to 2:10, you're going to have individual period with your players. And that individual 5 minutes, you better have listed out the drills that you want run. You better have them handed to your equipment manager so they can help you set up the drills so that there's absolutely zero wasted time. And that's why when we talk about on the field, we never walked anywhere because you don't have time to walk.
Yeah,
you got to be running from drill to drill to make sure that you're there ready so you can maximize the amount of development that you're getting out of every practice. And that's just having a sense of urgency. So, you know, you're not going to run from meeting to meeting, or you're not going to run from office to office, but doing things with a sense of urgency. Like when I follow up with somebody immediately after a meeting, or when I give somebody the thing that I told them I would give them immediately, in the real world, it blows people's minds. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe you got this to me already. And I'm like, when else would I get it to you? You know, like this is my standard of operation. Yeah. If I ask you for something and you don't get it to me immediately, I'm wondering why I haven't gotten it yet. Like, what are you doing that's more important? You told me you would give me this. Where is it? So, you know, that sports mentality and creating championship behavior and championship, you know, mindset. Alabama wins because they do every little thing right constantly. Are they like very talented and super deep with talent? Absolutely. But there's a lot of teams that are really talented and deep with talent in college football that aren't able to win consistently like Alabama does. It's because he harps on every single detail. And when people watch somebody make a catch in the corner of an end zone and he drags both feet, they go, oh, that was a great play, touchdown. But when another team doesn't do it, they're like, oh, that would have been a great play. Well, Alabama doesn't ever have that would have been a great play.
Right,
Alabama just consistently makes that play over and over and over without making mistakes, which makes them so hard to beat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. You know, it's just about that, you know, that overwhelming, that preparation and that, you know, just
how many people in the business world are preparing. I work with sales professionals, you know, I talk to them about like, well, you know, do you have your 15 minutes before that meeting blocked so that you can go over your game plan again? You know, like, oh, wait a minute, you don't have a game plan for this meeting? How could you walk into a meeting and not have a game plan? You don't know any, like you haven't done any research on the person that you're going to sit down with. I don't care if it's your first meeting. Like, what do you mean? You didn't go on social media and figure out where they went to school, what their family is like, where they're from, you know, what they post about on social media, what people they follow on LinkedIn. Like there's endless amount of information that you have to tap into, but you got to take the time to do the preparation and build the game plan to walk in order to have the best opportunity for success. But there's a reason that on Fridays before a Saturday game, that Friday practice was a walkthrough of every single scenario and everything that was in the game plan so that when you ran it on Saturday, you had already practiced it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now you refreshed it one more time for Friday. There's no reason that everybody shouldn't be executing at the optimal level.
Yeah.
So taking those philosophies and applying them to the business world to make it make sense for people to go, okay, I get it. This is how I can act like a true professional or a true champion within the business world.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Adam Gase didn't do walkthroughs very, very often.
Man, look, we had to deal with him in Miami for a little while. So
yeah.
When the Jets took him, I was like, thanks, appreciate you.
still mind-boggled to this day, like the reasoning behind them even taking him. Well, it's like, oh, okay, he was good against us, so we're going to hire him as our head coach. Like,
I got to tell you, whatever him and Peyton Manning have going on must be something really special because, I mean, Peyton's the guy who got him his first head coaching gig.
But it
was the stamp of Peyton Manning that you have to hire this guy. And I think, you know, you see that in the business world as well as the sports world. Just because somebody's a really good offensive coordinator doesn't mean they're a good head coach. Just because somebody's a really good running backs coach or a quarterbacks coach doesn't mean they're a really good offensive coordinator. Just because somebody's really a really good sales associate doesn't mean they should manage the sales team. And just because somebody's a really good sales manager doesn't mean that they need to be a regional manager. And just because somebody's a good, you know, regional manager doesn't mean they should be a CEO. And, you know, just because somebody's founded a company doesn't mean that they're great at growing the company or building the company. They're just passionate about the thing that they started. They need help in order to build the organizational structure, in order to build true sales process, in order to have a objective perspective of how to grow the business, because it's their baby, you know? And yeah. So that's the fun part of being where I'm at, and as privileged as I've been to work with some unbelievable leaders, is to be able to take that knowledge and take that perspective and convert it in a way that it can help people with whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can attest to the whole, founding and trying to build, but, I've just been nonstop, trying to figure it out as much as I can, as lean startup mentality as I can, because, I got family, two kids, day job, and just doing this. And I don't know if you know much about what I'm building with Playing the Field, but we're trying to build a social network
for sports social network. I love it.
Yeah. So, to get people to go to games together, play games together, have, pick up basketball games or find romantic partners. And it started out as a dating app, but now it's just been morphing into more of a community. But I had to code the app myself, build the app myself, marketing myself, sat there and made this podcast, which is, honestly, the reason for starting it was just another marketing angle, but it's turned into something completely different. It's taken on a life of its own, this podcast. And it's amazing. The people that we've had on, the relationships we've formed, and it's just awesome.
So here's something, and I know that this takes resources, but when you look at Alabama, right, Alabama has quality control coaches, which at a lot of other schools, those quality control coaches are young coaches that are trying to get in the profession, are, guys that are on their way out and just kind of in a consultant role. When you look at Alabama's quality control coaches, those guys are guys that are getting head coaching jobs next year. So, Nick Saban does an unbelievable job of building a very large staff of people that are all in the same mindset of, I'm trying to win a championship, I'm trying to get to the next level. I mean, Butch Jones was a guy who was not in his coaches count this year. Butch Jones is a guy who's a quality control coach. Butch Jones was the head coach of Tennessee prior to being the quality control coach at the University of Alabama. So I think it's important for startups or for anybody who's building a business to understand the value of resources, of people, of being able to delegate, being able to take things that need to get done and give them to other people. So finding ways to, get that extra hand and get that extra help, whether it be with free labor, through interns, whether it be through, any kind of paid assistance. There's all different kinds of ways to outsource what you're doing now, and still be able to quality control it. It's a huge part of scaling.
Yeah. And, we're starting off right now with 2021. Like, it was primarily mostly me all last year. Rick joined on in the summer. We started this thing, and, he's bought into, the idea and the company and everything. And now we have, I just hired a great group of interns to help me on the marketing and the design front, give me a little bit more time to keep developing the app, just trying to get those mobile those mobile app versions out there into the world, and looking to get that done within the next couple of months to really push it out there hardcore in 2021, and then hopefully the stadiums open back up and people could start going back to games and getting together and
but even if they don't, maybe you find a way to create the community around sports for people where they don't have to go, where they don't have to go to the bar, where they're able to meet together in situations like this. And I mean, that's the one thing I think about 2020 and the pandemic, that people still kind of talk about, well, when it goes back to normal. And I like, what's when normal? when you go down 21-0 in a game, it's not going back to 0-0. You got to figure out a way to win while you're down 21-0.
Yeah. All right. That's a good one. I like that.
That's a good way to look at it.
That's kind of when I talk to people about like what change has happened is, if you are standing in the middle of change, well, I'm just going to wait for it to get back there, it might not ever go back to there.
So
instead of thinking about, well, here, I'm going to make this plan for when it gets back, start making that plan for how do I win right now? What would be successful right now? And what would it look like if it never went back? If it's going to continue to evolve this way, what's going to make it successful in that environment, in that atmosphere, in those ways? And I think that's the, you know, the Elon Musks of the world and, you know, the really successful entrepreneurs, even the Mark Cubans who understand where industries are going or look at that. You know, Gary Vee talks about it all the time, but I think it's super important because that's the mentality that I take, is the, everything is a game to me. And when the environment changed, I got to figure, all right, let's adjust the game plan. Let's look at what we're doing. We're not going to scrap everything. We can't scrap everything. We're here. We got to keep playing, right? We can't go get all new players. Can't create all new plays. We got to figure out what will work with what we have right now. And let's continue to evolve from here. And so I think that's a really important mentality for people, especially right now. Like, I think people were kind of like, 2021, 2020 is over. We're done. We're going back. Guys, the vaccines are still taking a long time. Long time, guys. You know, like,
yeah.
Man, you get used to this. You know, it's like, how do we win? If it never changes, what do you got to do to be successful right now?
Right.
Yeah. It's like a law of life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a one year, 2 year long halftime. You know, where you have to just try and figure out how to get back from 40 to nothing. but if it's against the Falcons,
there's a shot.
It might happen. Yeah.
Always a chance. There's always a chance. That's why they play the games on Saturday. That's why they play the games on Sunday. There's always a chance.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly.
You know, I was going to ask you, you bring up Nick Saban a lot. You know, Saban, he takes a lot of guys on. Like, I think he's going to take on Bill O'Brien or Gase, but he did it with Steve Sarkisian. He did it with Lane Kiffin. These guys that sort of fail at first, he builds them and he recreates them. I don't know what he does over there. I don't know if it's a program. It's a system. Can people in the business world create something like that where they take somebody where it didn't work out for them before?
They 1,000% should. I mean, one of the clients that I'm working with right now is a relatively large retail company. And that's our primary focus, is continuing to build a standard operating procedure. Right. When Nick Saban hires somebody, when Nick Saban hires a new offensive coordinator, they don't adopt the new language for the offensive coordinator. Right. The offensive coordinator adopts language that the kids already know, because the plays are the plays. Like, and, and for anybody who thinks that, like, you know, everybody's running these drastically different plays, there's five or six different kinds of philosophies on offense, and everybody's relatively running the same thing. There's inside zone, there's outside zone, there's power, there's counter. You know, there's quick game pass, there's drop back pass, there's play action pass, you know, and everybody's got their own little nuances and combinations, but it's generally the same thing. You're playing 11 on 11 and you're throwing, running, tackling. So when he hires somebody who's got a system that they're used to calling things a certain way, certain words mean certain things, he goes, I got 110 guys out there that know it as this. I got one guy in here that knows it as that. Should we teach all of them something new, or should you learn something new?
Right.
Makes them conform to the system.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, as a CEO, whether you hire great talent, you hire a CFO from somewhere else, you know, do you have a system for them to conform to? Do you have a language? Does everybody in your company speak the same language? If everybody's not speaking the same language, how is it possible to have everybody on the same playing field? Right. And if you study Nick Saban and you understand what he learned from Bill Belichick, he'll tell you this. The greatest thing he learned from Bill Belichick was that he knew exactly what he was responsible for and was always held accountable for what he was responsible for. There was no guessing in what his job was and what his role was. Same thing for in Nick Saban's program. Whether you're the offensive coordinator or whether you're a student assistant or you're the ball boy, you know exactly what your job is and how it's supposed to be done. And then he holds you accountable to doing that. There are not a lot of organizations who have clearly defined people's jobs for them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people are going to work saying, I think I know that what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think I have an idea on how I'm supposed to do it, but they don't really know. Mm-hmm. And so people that are in leadership positions are getting pissed that things aren't getting done the way they want them done, yet they've never actually clearly explained to them and set the expectation for what's supposed to happen. So, you know, Nick Saban does an unbelievable job of defining people's roles, setting expectations, and then holding people accountable to those expectations day in and day out. And it's a grind. It's grueling, but yeah, he does an unbelievable job of it. And that's why they're so successful. And that's why I talk about him so much, because, yeah, you know, there's very few guys who can do it that way.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think he failed in the pros then?
Because that doesn't work with professional athletes.
Professionals, yeah.
Like, I mean, I think you got to take a little bit off of it. I mean, when, yeah, you look at Bill Belichick, I think he's the closest to Nick Saban as far as mentality and getting people to buy in to do your job, yeah, and the Patriot way and having a system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was also showing up at the Halloween party with the pirate suit on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? Like, I don't see Nick Saban showing up to a Halloween party with me, you know? So you got to figure out where you fit, you know? And, yeah, I think Nick tried to be who he had been, what had made him successful at LSU in Miami.
Yeah.
I don't know that that works in the NFL. You know, I think you got to be able to take a little bit off. You got to have a little savvy. You got to understand how to work with a Tom Brady and, you know, make it not all about the system and me, but a little bit about, okay, we have two people leading this thing. And so, you know, I mean, I would never speculate on, you know, and say he couldn't be successful at it, but obviously, and look, Miami was a disaster at that point anyway.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, let's not pretend that the Dolphins were the greatest organization, yeah, to be a part, yeah, of. If Bill Belichick walks into, I mean, if Nick Saban walks in to the Patriots instead of the Dolphins, is it a different story? If he's got Robert Kraft as his owner, instead of being down here with the circus that goes on year, yeah, in and year out, is it a different story? Maybe, you know, I mean, that's the thing with athletics is you could be the greatest coach in America. If you don't have talent, you're
screwed.
Yeah. You got, especially in the NFL where you're dealing, yeah, with the best of the best. It's, yeah, one thing to go be in the MAC where everybody is an average football team. You know, you can go dominate and, you know, you can win with average players. When you go to the SEC, you know, going to Kentucky, winning 8 games is a hard, hard thing to do. So you look at a guy like Mark Stoops, who's had 7, 8, 9, 10 wins year after year after year. There's a reason they love him there, because they understand how hard it is to win the SEC, especially, yeah, when you're Kentucky, when you can't recruit at the same level as Alabama, as Georgia, as Florida, as Tennessee, as, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
So in the NFL, where the playing field is all elite talent, look, you, mm-hmm, if you don't have everybody bought in and working in the same direction, and you have any kind of cancers or you have any kinds of coaches who don't see things, it can destroy the organization. Which, shout out to Brian Flores, because he's done an unbelievable job,
yeah,
of doing that.
Great
job.
I mean, absolutely, to flip that thing as fast as he has, and they're moving in the right, mm-hmm, direction.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Well, Rick asked it, you know, he said he was going to ask you about it. Do you think Tua is the answer over there?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt.
Wow.
I mean, I think if you can go get Devontae Smith, who just won the Heisman with the 3rd pick, and you give him an elite receiver on the outside, I mean, everybody wanted to throw Josh Allen out the window after his first year, too, in Buffalo. And now they're the best team in the, mm-hmm, AFC East, and people are picking them to battle against Kansas City for the AFC Championship. So, like, you know, to me, you don't take a Penei Sewell, who, you know, shout out to the Sewell family. I coached Gabe, his older brother, at the University of Nevada, and his middle brother, Nephi. Those are unbelievable family.
Wow.
But Penei is an elite offensive lineman, elite. And you only get an opportunity to take one of those guys every few decades. But, mm-hmm, if you feel like you have to take him at that pick, then I trade back. Trade him, you know, trade to whoever wants that, because you don't need him. The offensive line is good and is continuing to get better and is young. You need to get to, I mean, look at their backfield. They've got nobody in the run game. They've got no elite receivers outside that are a threat. You give him somebody that's an elite receiver that can stretch the field. I mean, look at what Jerry Jeudy did, and, you know, look at the way elite receivers change offenses in the NFL. Yeah. Give him somebody to throw the ball to, and the Bills did it. The Bills went and got Isaiah McKenzie from Georgia.
Yeah.
And look at the way it's changed what's happened to that football team.
Yeah, so, well, Diggs played a good part, big part in there too.
Sure, no doubt.
Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt. But, you know, you get a young guy who's got unbelievable speed that can stretch the field. I mean, that it's it matters. It really matters. And so, I think that would be a mistake to toss Tua out with the water this early. I think he's a winner. I think he's proven that he's a winner. I don't know if Chan Gailey's the guy for him. You know, I think you need to get a guy who's got a little bit more creativity. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw sparks of it this year from Coach Gailey, but I didn't see a lot of it. And that last game against Buffalo was a abysmal display of play calling. So, you know, you got to get a guy who understands how to play with Tua that can do some creative things. I mean, it's the same thing in Philly. Look, like, you got Jalen Hurts there. You got to have fun. You got to open it up because you have to.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's the problem in the NFL is most offensive coordinators say, no, we need to get players who fit my system instead of saying, okay, what kind of system do we need to run with the players that we have?
Yeah. No, I agree. So what's,
I mean, the league is changing.
Go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say, what's next for On the Ball? What's next for On the Ball Ventures? Where are you guys going? Where do you see your company in 5 years? Like,
continuing to grow. You know, we're on the verge of launching an online learning platform that is going to be very on brand for what we do. Highly curated content, you know, constant and continual pinging so that people can be involved not only with us, but have access to us daily, have access to content to where they can constantly be going back and finding ways to develop their skills and develop themselves as professionals on a daily basis. So that's one major, major project that I'm working on. Another one is continuing to expand the huddle. You know, I mean, I want to get 100 people there in the morning. I want to get 200 people there in the morning. I want to get 500 people there in the morning. I want to, you know, that we're building a community there. That's free. I'm not selling anything out of that. But I believe in team meetings. I believe in community. I believe in surrounding yourself with people that are on the same mission as you. You know, that's why Alabama is good as they are, not to beat a dead horse. But
No, at all.
Those guys all believe the same things and work the same way and keep the same standard. I want the huddle to be that way. I want everybody to be connecting with each other. And that's part of what we're building with Get On The Ball is a place where not only can people come in, learn, develop, and hone their skills, but they can also connect with other people that are doing the same thing. Because I think you're spot on. You know, with what you guys are creating, you know, it's all about community. It's all about community. So the more you can build community and bring people together, but also help them develop and grow at the same time, that's my passion.
Yeah, you know, that's why we love this so much. And, you know, obviously a lot of inspiration came from you, you know, from the huddle. And honestly, you're the fourth guest that we've had because of the huddle. You know, so yeah, no, so it's absolutely great. And everyone who's watching, you know, please tune in. It's on your dad's LinkedIn, right?
You got to go to Steve Dudelberg's page.
And then also on YouTube and Facebook, like you said.
There you go.
You know, speaking of LinkedIn, you know, you also do some trainings. You did LinkedIn like a pro, you know, to help people connect and utilize LinkedIn. And you have one this Monday. So talk to us about.
So we've got a video. A video event coming up this Monday, which is super cool. You know, part of what we really hang our hat on is helping companies modernize their sales process, and that just means taking the new tools, the digital tools of today, with old school mentality of relationship building and starting conversations and delivering value to people, and finding a way to merge that to create a more efficient, effective sales process for people. So LinkedIn is a strategy that we believe in wholeheartedly, but we don't believe in mass connecting. We don't believe in, you know, pitching people through DMs. We believe in building a very deliberate, you know, community of people that you have that you're able to do business with and deliver value to. And part of that, and part of the, you know, utilizing new tools is using video. Like, look, this is video content that we're in right now. But how are you using video in three different ways? One-to-one, one-to-group, and one-to-many, right? So it's like, you know, individual personalized, group personalized, and then mass video. But there's very specific strategies and techniques and companies and products and how to use it So we're doing that on Monday, you know, January 11th, 2021. Excited about that, 10 to noon. If anybody is interested in hopping into our webinar to learn about it, all you got to do is DM me. You can reach me on LinkedIn. You can reach me at Mark, M-A-R-C, at ontheballventures.com. Happy to shoot you the information, have a conversation with you, talk about what we're going to be teaching. But leveraging video in 2021 is a skill that everybody needs to be focused on. So we're happy to be kicking off the year with an event and partnering with Vidyard, who we believe in and we use, and to help people get the X's and O's of how to execute it.
Final so question.
So Vidyard is a asynchronous video tool, meaning that you can record videos and embed them in either emails or direct messages or in mail on LinkedIn. Oh. And it allows you to communicate your message in person, right? It allows you to verbally communicate with people, you know, and stand out from the clutter of the emails, because in all reality, email has taken the relationship out of the communication, right? It's very mundane. You got to worry about what you're typing and how you're saying it and making sure that people deliver it the right way. Well, Vidyard did an unbelievable job of creating a product that allows you to deliver video to people in a way that helps you build relationship, that helps you communicate at scale, that allows you to continue to build rapport, build trust, to develop better relationships and develop more business.
You know, one final one for me, because you're talking about digital, how sales is changing. And this is just, I'm a big analytics in the last 6 months have just blown my mind. But I don't know if you guys are using analytics, but do you think analytics within the sales process, it's taking away from giving value, it's taking away from relationship building, and it's making it more transactional?
Automation is.
Yeah.
So analytics. Okay. I think analytics are important. I'm big on that. Like every decision I made in football, every game plan I put together was based on data. Right. I wanted to know what they ran on third down. I wanted to know, you know, what they did in the first play of the game. Everything was studying the situation to get the analytics behind it.
Yeah.
Analytics help you make informed decisions. Automation makes it transactional. Taking the human out of the selling is the worst thing you can do for the longevity of your brand. Right. There's a lot. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of great tools for automation, sending out an automated newsletter and pinging people as a reminder to do things. And there's a lot of great tools that allow you to focus on things that matter. But if you're taking the human element out of building relationship with your customers, you're hurting your brand and the longevity of your brand.
No, I agree with you. That's why I want to bring that up, because this is how I feel, because I don't know if. I mean, me and Mike follow baseball too, and people feel like analytics is taking the human element out of baseball because guys are making decisions just based on data, right? They see what the numbers are, they just take the data. And I don't know how I feel that analytics is taking the human element out of the relationship and the value part of sales. You disagree?
Analytics helps you make an informed decision,
right?
But you still trust your gut. There's still the human element of knowing and feeling, and that's the convergence of it. Yeah. When you're using analytics and automation, you're just creating robots. And that's what a lot of sales training is inside of organizations, is they teach you scripts, they teach you qualifying questions, they tell you this is the order of meetings that it should go in.
Yes.
Have an initial discovery meeting, move them to a pitch deck. After a pitch deck, have the follow-up, have the close. Like, that's not life. We're dealing with people.
Yes, so exactly.
As the parameters of, hey, we would love to, this is the playbook. This is the scenarios that we'd like to work in. But if I've got the best, if I got Peyton Manning on the field, I'm not telling Peyton Manning what to run on third down.
Right.
He's seeing something happening on the field. He's got every right to check it and do it. So that's where it becomes teaching people the playbook and teaching them the scenarios and how to use it, and then giving them the freedom to be able to use it and do those things. So analytics are great because it helps you make informed decisions, but you still have to teach people and develop people how to make decisions in order to be successful.
Got it. All right. Well,
Well said.
Well said, my friend.
Before we let you go, yet again, Rick, we keep them going.
Man, it just keeps going, because
it's great, obviously, chatting with you. But you know, so obviously you do a lot of coaching. So what is something like one coachable moment that you want to share with our audience for how to attack this year, no matter what they're trying to do, whether it's in business and in personal, you know, what's that one piece of advice that you would give our audience out there?
Be deliberate. Be deliberate and be focused. I think we live in a world of distraction, right? Yeah. Your phone is pinging every 30 seconds. And look, I get yelled at all the time at home. I can't say, wants to shoot me with my phone. Especially when you're in the content creation world and you're trying to connect and be where your feet are. And whatever it is that you've decided is an important task for you to do, make sure that you're focused on that task and you do that to the best of your ability before you move on to the next thing. I think in this world of distraction, we get caught scrolling in the middle of doing this thing and answering a call here and doing that there. And, you know, you got to learn how to set boundaries. So being deliberate about what you're doing and getting comfortable with saying no and staying focused on whatever it is that you've decided is the important thing you're focused on, that will make you successful in 2021.
All right. There you have it, baby. Amazing. Mark Nuttallberg, everybody.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Mark, guys.
Thanks again. And
yeah, Mark, great morning. Stuff, man. Yeah, yes, see you tomorrow morning.
We'll see you 8 a.m.
Tomorrow morning.
All right.
All righty. Everyone, it's Nuttallberg Daily Huddle. Check them out tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Stay on the ball.
And Mark at ontheballventures.com for more information. All right. Have a good night.
Thanks, Mark.
Take it easy.
Yeah, he's right about that. When you're with your girl, man, you're scrolling on the phone. That is not a good thing. Yeah, it's not a good thing.
No, but it was great.
That was great, man. That guy has a lot of energy, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So great way to start off the year. Yeah. And as we talk about on the ball, you know, the first thing is building that winning culture, that winning mindset. And unfortunately, there were a couple of teams this year that did not have the right people in the system.
Yes.
They did not have the preparation that they needed to succeed. I don't think it's with any surprise that one of those, his name was Adam Gase.
Correct.
I think we talked about it and beat that dead horse for a long time. And
yeah,
was it before the season even started? Because I'm pretty sure it was. But in addition to Adam Gase, you know, there was a lot of other coaches, some that were let go halfway through the season, including Bill O'Brien, Dan Quinn of the Falcons, and Matt Patricia of the Lions. But this Bloody Monday, Black Monday, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The Jets have finally let go Adam Gase. And it took him about an hour after the game. So that's, you know,
they didn't even let him on the bus, man.
That was just a little bonus because we thought it was going to be Monday. So, you know, we'll take it. The Jaguars let go of Doug Marrone. You know, that shouldn't be a surprise. And the Chargers fired Anthony Lynn.
They did.
Yeah, I think if all those coaches, Anthony Lynn's definitely going to get a job somewhere. I'm sure everyone's going to get a job somewhere. But I think Anthony Lynn is the only one with any kind of promise out of those.
Yeah.
Adam Gase should not.
He should not be around organized football ever again.
Coach, again, I cannot say it enough, but – you know, that's just the way it is. And the Jets did reach out to try to interview Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs. You know, that's one of the coaches that they're eyeing and they want to bring in for an interview. So let's just see what happens. It's obviously a long off season. I mean, yep. I'm sure some moves are going to be made, you know, shortly after the Super Bowl, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have playoff football and a new playoff format this year. But, Rick, you know, talk to us about your opinions on all the firings.
Well, look, obviously the Adam Gase one for all of us Jet fans, that one has been since the day the guy got hired and he walked in and had that just ridiculous press conference. We were all waiting. Yeah.
Exactly. We were all waiting for him to be fired. You know, but I got to say, the Charger job looks to me the most attractive. That offense is, I mean, if you get a coach in there, the right coach in there, if I'm Bienemy and I'm looking at all the jobs out there, right?
Oh, yeah. In division, too.
The Jaguars, because you have they're going to draft Trevor Lawrence. The Jet job can look promising. They have Justin Fields, or they might keep Sam Darnold. That two pick is lucrative. And, you know, when Mark was talking about Penei Sewell, I mean, if the Jets would draft him, put him at left tackle, move Mekhi to right, and just work on the interior of the offensive line. I mean, you have your offensive line set for the next decade. You're good, you know. But the Charger job, man, that job is ready to go. Herbert as a rookie, just how many touchdowns did he have this year? What he had, what, close to 30, right? Mid-20s or something like that?
I think
you have a
30, what, maybe 29.
Whatever it was. I mean, you have him out there with
Keenan. I think the record was 28.
Yeah. You put him out there with 31. Keenan Allen. Yeah, through 31. You put him out there with Keenan Allen. I mean, you have that offense is flying. That guy's throwing rockets all over the field. You shore up the defense. I mean, that to me, if I'm Bienemy or any of the coaches out there that are legit coaches, that's the first job I'm looking at right there. Then the second job, obviously, you're looking at Jacksonville. And then you're looking at the Jets. But the Jet job is different than all other jobs because the Jet job needs somebody to walk in there and sort of, like Mark was talking about, drop the hammer. Have a culture. Have a discipline. Have, like, to the T things done because that team needs structure. It needs discipline. But above all, it needs talent. And Joe Douglas needs to get talent. He's got, you know, a bunch of picks in the next couple of drafts. They need to get talent in there. Now, mind you, I love Penei Sewell, but Sam Darnold, whoever the quarterback's going to be, can't throw it to, you know, they can't keep throwing the ball to James Crowder all the time. You know what I'm saying? Or Breshad Perriman, who just was awful. So, you know, they need to get a professional coach in there. The Falcons, you need somebody who just completely is a whole new energy because there is like a curse on that team after the Super Bowl. Somebody new in there, man.
Yeah.
The line job, they never get it straight over there. They should get somebody in there like Robert Saleh, defense coordinator for the 49ers. The guy's from Michigan. They need somebody like that there. And then what was the other job that's open? We talked Jacksonville Jets.
The Texans.
You got to get somebody in there to make that offense more explosive, man. Like Deshaun Watson's a talent that's just being wasted over there. You got to get somebody in there that can turn that thing around. And if you heard his comments,
was it more the defense this year?
No, it was the culture.
I mean,
too.
Watson doesn't have any protection. The guy's been playing with no offensive line his entire career.
Right. I mean, well, listen, but that's why they traded to get Laremy Tunsil over there.
And look what he does.
Yeah. So, but you got to get
up those numbers with no offensive line.
Right. But that's why they traded with Miami to get Laremy Tunsil over there. I don't know why they gave up DeAndre Hopkins. You know, Brandon Cook was this year. So,
well, that was,
you know,
Bill O'Brien too, that DeAndre Hopkins
moved. So those jobs are lucrative, but I think, you know, for the coaching searches, the San Diego job to me is the most intriguing one. And then obviously the Jaguars are talking Urban Meyer. That looks like it's, you know, it's going to be a Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer, you know, marriage over there. And just the question is, does Urban Meyer come up with his drama that he's not feeling well, blah, blah, blah. You know how he is. And then again, the Jet job, man, you got to bring General Patton in there. Find another Bill Parcells or somebody like that, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see. So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I
mean, yeah, especially if they're still up in the air, whether they want a quarterback and if they want to keep Sam Darnold, like, you know, our coach is going to be a little, you know, hesitant on, you know, on signing a deal and signing on as head coach if, you know, they don't know what's going on for draft day.
Yeah, you know, I think the coach who takes that job is going to know whether he wants to keep Sam or not. My guess is if you're a new coach, you're going to want to be in there with your own guy. And I think for Sam, the best thing for him is to move on, go somewhere else. I mean, there's talk that the 49ers would love to have him over there. He's a California kid. The Steelers could pick him up. I mean, he could rejuvenate his career with the Patriots, for God's sakes. But, you know, somewhere out there. And look, he's young. He's 23, 24 years old. I mean, he's a young guy.
No, I know. No, obviously he's got years ahead of him, and I'm sure he's going to bounce back. You know, it just
didn't work out for him here.
No, you know, obviously there was too much going against him. Yeah. You know, and having Adam Gase, you know, coach him for the last 2 years.
Dude,
you know,
how does that anybody? How does that guy even get considered for a job at Alabama? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what Saban's thinking over there, man. Maybe because he's the one that runs a show over there. But
maybe he wants to prove that he could change people, you know, and change that, you know, their mindset, change their coaching ability. I don't know.
You know, yeah. And you know, then
it is what it is.
And if Mike, if you will indulge me for a moment, I've been a long suffering Knicks fan for 20 years. I grew up in the 90s with Ewing and Starks and Oakley and the Mace and the song Go New York or New York Go. And my beloved New York Knicks, for those of my friends who know me out there, who I always bet them they're going to make the playoffs and they never do, are 4-3. We found our port card, IQ, Manuel Quigley. We found Doc Rivers' son, Austin Rivers, coming off the bench. Julius Randle, no handles Randle, I used to call him. Now he's the man. Is averaging like a triple-double a game. The Knicks are 4-3. They're a real team. All we're waiting on is for Alex Burks to come back from injury, from Obi Toppin to come back from injury. And my beloved New York Knicks, I'm going on the record right now, will win 36 games. They'll go 500. And they were making the playoffs. And I've been waiting to say this all day. I've been waiting 20 god-awful years for this. I even got a pair of Knicks pajamas somebody gave me, for Christ's sake, that I wear. My New York Knicks, the blue right here, the orange, whatever color that is. New York Knicks are back. Reddish, is that a red? Yeah. What a Cardinal red. But my New York Knicks and Tom Thibodeau, the coach, they're back. And that's all I got to say. I'm excited. I can't take my eyes off the Knicks. I love everything they do. Screw Brooklyn. They're a mess. But my Knicks with IQ and Rivers and Toppin and Randle, we're going to the playoffs. And I'll end on that note.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Hey, you're calling it right now.
I have to let it out.
January 5th, 2021 at 10:12 p.m.
Take it down.
He's
going to the playoffs. We have a real team.
Playoff berth for the New York Knickerbockers. So, and the Nets are 4-4. They're not, you know, that far
away. Yeah. They just won tonight. But, this is a young team. I'm sorry, RJ. I forgot to mention RJ Barrett. I mean, this is a young team. They drafted a couple of guys real well. They got a good what the Jets need, a coach like Thibodeau comes in, drops the hammer. This is the structure. This is the way we're going to play and build that culture that this is the way we're going to win. That's what the Jets need. That's what the Knicks have just developed. Bring them on. Don't matter who we're playing, bring them on.
Listen, you know, it's a great way to start compared to, you know, what they've endured for the last 20 years. I mean, let's be real about it. So I hope they come back into that, you know, that little, even if it's just like a mini golden era.
No, it's going to be golden for the next 10 years. It will be golden. And by the way, your boy, Steve Cohen, I wanted to get into this with you. What is up with the Mets? No signings. No aggressive moves. Mike, I want your thoughts on this. What is going on in Flushing?
So what I hear is, you know, he has the ability to go and throw the house at somebody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean to throw the house. You go, you wait, you find out what other people are offering, and then you go and add a dollar to that add a million to that. Don't throw away unnecessary funds if you don't have to. So you wait for other people to play and then you come in, swoop in, and you up that bid a little bit. Right. You know, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, you know, it's about, the guy is a billionaire for a reason.
Yes.
He's smart with money. So he's not going to just throw it away and say, okay, here's a blank check. Come and play with us. Name your number. No, he's going to have them get offers and then he's going to swoop in. And he's also very concerned about whether, he should get sprinkles on his Carvel ice cream too. But
All right, man. Well, listen, I'm pulling for you, man. But when I it's been a couple months since he bought the team already, and like nothing's going on, dude. Like, what's up?
I'm patient. Okay. My patient. I'm a Mets fan. Of course I'm patient. All right. No, but I'm not worried about it. The culture, I still like the culture that, you know, that he's, you know, breathed some life into, and you know, and it just totally gave it a facelift, you know, from the previous ownership. And I'm excited, and you know, I think, you know, Springer just got offered a deal from the Blue Jays, which is well under the $150 million he's asking for.
Okay.
So nobody's really even going out there. So, you know, Steve Cohen could go and swoop in and say, okay, here, we'll give you this. Because the, you know, the highest you've gotten offered so far is this.
Got it.
And, you know, come to New York. I, you know, there's no rush. I mean, we're just in January. We're just in January.
Yes. It's a new year. I agree.
It's in February. I get it, but it's, well, if it is even in February, who knows what's going to go on this year. If pitchers and catchers gets, you know, changed up a little bit, and spring training gets changed up, but we have to wait and see on that. But I'm excited. Well, I'm excited for the season to start, you know, but first we got to get through NFL playoffs and Super Bowl, and should be a fun one. I mean, I like this whole one bye this time around, and six games this weekend. And
yeah, it's going to be a good football weekend. And Thursday, for all our viewers, we'll break down the games and we'll give you our picks.
Yeah, we'll definitely, you know, research the lines and give you our picks for this weekend, which, you know, has a couple of pretty cool games.
Yeah. And for NBA fans, the Knicks are taking on the Utah Jazz tomorrow night at the Garden at tip-off is, I believe,
7:30
tip. Hopefully we'll have Alex Burke back. And for real, for all you Knicks fans that suffer like I have, I mean, this team is just so fun to watch, man. Can't take your eyes off them. IQ's great. Rivers is great. Barrett's playing bully ball in the post with these little small forwards. Randall with his handles. I mean, you got Mitch who's blocking shots. And Tibbs coaching his ass off. You got to love it, man. Got to love it. All right. Well, that's it for me. So.
Yeah, I think, I think this was a decent,
this is a lot of fun show.
Yeah. And we are happy to be back. And we can't wait to come back again on Thursday night with another guest for episode 46 overall and episode 2 of season 2. I hope you enjoyed tonight. And until Thursday, have a great night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. See you on Thursday. Peace.
Have a good one.